Yes, ma'am. They love them. They don't eat all of them. They eat 10 apart.
They want all what they can.
You got to cut down an old tree in the cow pasture, and an old cow will fall form right around you where they get that stump and eat that bitter. They like that stuff. So, that done got a bit tough again. So I find the 10 apart, the 10 apart, take it right out of there. Go cutting again. See how easy that breaks off?
See, if you're really high class, you call it heart of palm.
And you pay a lot to buy it.
Yeah, you pay a lot for it. But if you're a cracker, we call it swamp cake.
It's good stuff. And we put anything in the world, and this cabbage is still good. We used to make cabbage dumplings. We put little hamburger bowls in it. Make it go further, you know, sometimes we have a big family. But it's good any kind of way. A lot of people have cancer real bad. Sometimes they can hold this down when they can't hold down any other food. And so a lot of times I cut a lot of cabbage and cook it for them and take it to them. And they appreciate it. And I get a blessing out of it.
What's your favorite way of preparing
it? We eat it mostly like this.
Yeah, but she needs what we put in here.
In my family, I don't eat bacon or nothing, but in my family we put margarine in it. But the old timers, all of them use bacon. White bacon to flavor it up.
How long do you have to boil it?
About an hour. But you don't put too much water. If you put too much water, it ruins it. Just a little bit of water, just like you could cook a green cabbage.
All that cabbage is gone there now. The rest of it's in there. Whenever we get through cutting up like that, all us old youngins, we just grab a hold of it and eat it. It's good. Make good slices. I tried to give a lady a piece while ago. She says, "Will this hurt me?" I'm going to play Amazing Grace. Finish this off.
Any questions? There will be swamp cabbage ready at about 11 o'clock, more or less. There's going to be plenty of it. So you're welcome to have some swamp cabbage and rice and tomato gravy, cornbread, I think. They're going to have cornbread, too. Yeah, so please join us. We'll be here all day, today and tomorrow. Thank you very much. Harold Douglas. He'll have to tell you.
I missed that part.
Judy, want to help? All right, we finished this set a little early, so we're going to be doing something that here now that we'll probably do a little bit of all weekend, and we're going to have one of our cowboy poets get up and fill in some of the time. Mr. Doyle Rigdon from down near Okeechobee, actually near Brighton. He works for the Likes Brothers Cattle Company, and he studied some or learned a little bit from the other cowboy poet that's here today, Mr. Carl Sharp. So let's have a big hand for Doyle Rigdon.
I'll go to the short one because I'm a little bit short. Now, dealing with horses all the time, most of the time you get a little, take somebody else's horse in to get a little extra money, but you have some horses that people think these are like big dogs. You know, they make pets out of them. And I had a horse one time that was raised in a backyard in Loxahatchee. He's about 16 hands, 3 years old, probably weighed about 1,200. He was a good horse, but the only thing was, he thought he was a big dog. He'd nip and run and wouldn't let you mess with his feet or nothing. But brought to mind a poem I'd read about a few years back. I cannot remember who wrote this poem because I found it in the Western Horseman magazine. It's called Pets. Horses named Baby and horses named Sweetie and horses named Honey Pie, too. Well, these sure ain't names for a horse from the range of the high-riding tough buckaroo. Nope, they're all in my string. Gypsy, Princess, and King. And I've found to my lasting regret, they ain't nothing worse than the horse trainer's curse, the ubiquitous backyard pet. Well, I wanted a way to ride horses for pay, so I hung out my shingle in town, and from out of the woodwork in every backyard came horses from miles around. Can you take him and break him and train him? Can you make him loyal and true? Can you make him neck rein in a week and be tame so Grandma can ride him too? Heck, you bet. I can ride him with ease. It should be a breeze, because after all, he's only a pet. I got Arabs and ponies and appies. Oh, my. Morgans and thoroughbreds, too. Well, I hate to admit it, but they're giving me fits. Though they're not very bronky, it's true. They're just like New Yorkers, these rude little porkers. They ain't got an ounce of respect. They've bloodied my nose and stomped all my toes, and every last one is a pet. Well, I worked and I worked and I worked out the quirks. I overed and undered and sacked. I lined them all out and reined them about, taught them how to stop and get back. Then I called up their mamas and papas. I said, Honey Pie is ready to roll. Bring your gear. Let's see if it fits to a T. Bring your checkbook, because you in the hole. When the horses were gone and my heart was a song and I hummed as I handled my pay, and I drove to the bank to join in the rank of people with money that day. But it weren't over yet, because when I wrote out the check to pay for the hay, grain, and vet, I found I'd only made 26 cents a ride on each of those pets. So I gave it all up for a rig and a pup. I ride the road from Seattle to Butte. When the weekend rolls in, well, I head for the pen, and I saddle my own trusty brute. But he bloodies my nose, and he stomps all my toes. He's as piggy as any I've met. He gets fed too much, he ain't ridden enough, and the bugger acts just like a pet. This might be a little... I don't think that one was on. So I'll pick this one up a little bit. That way I don't feel like, you know, tattoo. Deplane, deplane. Okay, that wasn't as funny as I thought it was going to be. But anyway, there we go. Huh? Well, I've done adjusted this one. Thanks. Appreciate it. But anyhow, when I had that horse from Loxahatchee, I knew I really didn't want to take this horse. But the day work had slacked up a little bit. I wasn't working steady anywhere. So I'm like, you know, $400 a month, it won't hurt. And besides, my Uncle Duane always told me it's the problem horses that'll teach you stuff. Because you see a problem, you figure a way through it, and then you've got that licked the next time you run into a horse with that same problem. But I didn't want to take this because I knew how the person was going to be. They was going to be fawning, oh, my little baby and everything. And see, this bugger was a gelding, but he thought he was, you know, the bull of the woods in a sort of way of speaking. We turned him out there with all those mares we had, and they pretty much taught him, you know, to keep from sucking eggs, as the old expression goes. They broke him from sucking eggs because, in fact, he'd go to bully around, and they'd just kick him off. And he was solid black, a gorgeous horse, double muscled. I mean, you could rope the biggest thing in the woods, and he'd never worry about getting jerked down. But the thing was, because those mares kept kicking him off, he had all these little marks all over him. And we'd put that little yeller salve on there that's supposed to help heal those, you know, rashes. He looked like a reverse leopard out. Instead of white with black spots, he was black with yeller spots. And I told him, the $400 a month covers the feed, too. You don't have to bring it. But every week, they'd bring a bag of feed, and I'm like, oh, no. Because they'd see that horse, and he'd have a mark on him. And they'd just go, oh, and I'm like, look, It's a horse. It'll heal. It won't even have a scar. He just got to learn the pecking order. It took that horse 2 weeks to figure out he wasn't who he thought he was. Those mares were in charge. But they kept coming, and they'd bring the feed out, and they'd keep going on and on about that. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. And I'll never take another horse from a backyard as long as I live. Let me say that with a caveat. Lord willing, I won't ever get that hungry. I'm not going to say I won't do anything, because there's nothing I won't do within reason if I get hungry enough. But dealing with problem horses is a thing you've got to deal with all the time, especially if you're a horseshoer. My dad shod horses for a while. My granddad said he was a heck of a shoer, but dad was just a little bit lazy and didn't want to make a living like that because it takes a toll on your back. And Baxter Black had written a poem that is just perfect for most shoers. I don't think we have any shoers up here, but anybody who's ever been around horseshoers or seen problem horses, they could appreciate this poem. It's called Shoeing Pig Eye. "Just count me out," said Wilford as he lay there in the dirt, a shoeing her ass behind his ear, a hoof print on his shirt. "Well, I'll handle this," said Freddy. "You just get on out of the way. This sorry bag of buzzard bait has met his match today." Now, the horse weren't much to look at, not the kind you'd probably buy, but you wouldn't know that he's bad news till you looked him in the eye, because it was small and mean and glittered as deep as Jacob's well, like looking down the smokestack of the furnace room in hell. Well, Freddy grabbed a set of nippers and bent to grab the hoof. When he woke up, his shoeing chaps was dangling from the roof. His shirt tail hung in tatters, and his watch had come unwound. The nipper's orbit finally peaked and then clattered to the ground. "You get a twitch," said Freddy. "I'm about to clean his clock." He grabbed himself a rope, and then he fished it past the hock, and then pulled back on the sideline to instill a little fear when Pig Eye bit a good-sized chunk from Wilford's offside ear. Wilford tangled in the sideline and tried to navigate while dragging round the horse corral like alligator bait. Freddy tried to stop his trolling with a loop around the head, and it might have worked if only he'd caught the horse instead. But of course he caught poor Wilford, who left a funny track, sort of like an oil slick when Freddy jerked the slack. By now the boys were grouchy from this troublesome travail. They thought that they'd be done by noon, but they'd not drove a nail. "Go get the power wagon," Will winched to a post. They got the cayuse necked up tight and set to work, almost, because the halter broke and Pig Eye walked the length of Freddy's back, and they rolled beneath the axle like two lovers in the sack. Freddy heard the sound like 1,000 rifle choirs. "I got the sucker pinned down, Fred. I shot out all the tires." It was dark before Wilford stood up and laid his hammer down. A gross of crooked city heads lay scattered all around. Ropes ran to the horse, still pinioned underneath. They ran to concrete bridge abutments and Harrah's missing teeth, to worn-out old appliances and a broke-down drilling rig, and a pair of post-hole diggers somebody had left mid-dig. The place looked like a cross between a drunken spider's web and a yard sale after Chernobyl's red glow had begun to ebb. Wilford couldn't move his elbow, but he grinned proudly and said, "Old pard, we done a good day's work," to what was left of Fred. "Just look at that there shoeing job. Them clinches in a row. Now that's such a good example that we ought to make a video." Freddy gazed around the battlefield and rubbed his aching knee. "What say we wait till morning to put on the other three?" My dad has had some run-ins like that. He was telling me one time, see, Dad got called into the ministry for a little bit, for several years, but at this one point he was a chaplain at a racetrack down in southwest Louisiana. Anybody who's ever been around folks being in the ministry in kind of a small, unknown mission field knows that you have to live on faith because of the fact there ain't much money out there. Well, Dad had heard of a fellow who needed some horses shod over just over in Texas, because we was like 2 miles from the Texas-Louisiana line. So he went over there to shoe about 20 head of these horses. And Dad said he ain't never seen a wreck like what he seen there. They had this big old arena, and about 20 head of horses probably ain't had a hand laid on them in their life. And he had about five or six Mexicans. They had them tied up every which way, because that's the only way you could do it. You had to have them tied up, cross-legged, looked like somebody had done tied them for a calf roping contest, had them stretched out like this. I mean, he said they'd catch them as they come by, and about two or three of them be on that rope, and they'd just jerk, and that horse would cut a flip. And he's like, good night, they're going to kill them. Them horses, they was able to stick it out, though, and he got them all shod. But I think that's the last time he shod any horses. I think that's the last time he said, this is crazy. I'm getting too old for this. But many people, let me preface this. Cowboy poetry is nothing new. It's been around probably since the first fellow who ever thought about putting it down to paper, or he come up with his head as he was riding. It's been around for, you know, probably two centuries probably now. Well, yeah, because, heck, this is the 21st century. It started back in the 1800s. Yeah, that'd be about two centuries. Me and math don't get along. That's why I work for cows for a living. I was going to be an astronomer. I was going to be a scientist. And I got to thinking, you know, I hate math. And no matter how many times I go back and check my work, I always leave out that simple arithmetic, that one that should have been there. And I'll be done said Pluto's over here when it should be over here, and I'll get fired. So that's why I follow a cow around all day. And plus, it's much more interesting work. I do count them, but the good news is we got two of our other three guys counting, too, to make sure we're all right, because I may have one count, and he may have another count. And generally, if you got two people with the same count, that's the count you go with. That's the right one. And I always tell them, don't you say nothing to me, because I can't think and talk at the same time. I got to do one thing only, and then I move on, like Charles Emerson Winchester. That's for, okay. They're about ready for the next deal with the FFA, so I will turn it over to Bob, and he can do the introducing.